Welcome to The Advertising Show, America's only radio program focusing on advertising, media, marketing, product development, branding, new media, sales and customer relations. Stay with us for entertaining marketing discussion and our special guest interview. Now, here are your hosts, Ray Schillens and Brad Forsythe.
And even a couple of weeks after Thanksgiving, we're still eating turkey, aren't we?
Well, yeah. I got rid of my carcass.
Did you?
Yeah.
You went out to California for that guy out there to get rid of that,
I guess. The dogs were starting to look at
the
it.
The dogs were looking at it.
Yeah.
Anyways, Ray Schillens and Brad Forsythe back with you on The Advertising Show. And The Advertising Show is being brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. Visit online at adage.com. The Advertising Show is a Big Radio Midgets production. And today as our special guest, we have Hank Kim, who is editor of Advertising Age's Madison and Vine. It's a really cool new thing, and we'll talk to Hank, and we'll find out more about that, too, as we get into the interview here in just a few moments. Patrick Meyer on the way from Fusion 5, and, of course, Mary Lou Quinlan. We've got the Wacky World of Marketing coming up at the bottom of the hour. What is it going to be today, good or bad?
Bad.
Yeah. I'll make a note of that.
And, of course, what Andy Borowitz. Did you mention Andy?
No.
Well, we always have to get Andy. Andy's one of my favorites.
Andy has been getting a lot of exposure lately on CNN.
Is that right?
He kind of, I think what he does, he hangs out there. Can I be on? Can I be on? And then they put him on.
Well, you know, is he, he's up there with that Irish girl, Soledad O'Brien.
Yes, Soledad O'Brien.
And Bill Hemmer.
Bill Hemmer, yeah.
What is that called? Morning, This Morning?
Or CNN.
American Morning.
American Morning, yeah. It's actually a good outlet.
It is a good program.
That's one of the first places I go.
You think that fine lady that isn't there anymore, that's ratings going in the toilet in the evening, Paula Zahn, is wishing she was still back up there?
Yeah, I think she wishes she was.
Yeah.
Although I saw a program of hers, and I thought she did a pretty doggone good job. So it's sad that I feel like they put a good person in a bad place.
Yeah.
And
a little more
as
competitive.
A result, she's not doing so good.
I agree.
And anyway, we hope things do better. Here's another guy who's not doing so good. Well, I suppose that's relative, Roy Disney.
Oh, yeah, I heard about that.
Roy Disney. Yeah. He's Uncle...
Roy's pissed.
Uncle Walt's favorite nephew, I guess, or whatever.
Who's going to verify that?
Well, I guess... Well, he gave him the company.
Well, that's
crying
true.
Out loud.
That's true.
So, anyway, but Roy's out, and now he's trying to get Eisner out. I think that's real interesting.
You know, I'm seeing a reality show coming around here.
Are you really?
Oh, yeah. We're going to follow him.
Anyway.
See what he does.
What you got?
Well, you know, everyone knows about road rage, certainly, you know, in any big city.
Yeah,
you know
kidding.
About that, right?
Yeah.
Well, you know what the new breed of anger is?
What?
Spam rage.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's the result of course, infuriating junk mail, junk email that is just keeps coming, right?
And by the way, to those of you who spam the Advertising Show, we're not going to come over and blow you up, though.
No, but we're just going to give you a virus.
Yeah, exactly.
That keeps on giving.
I would like to do that.
The one victim of such anger is Silicon Valley computer programmer who has been arrested, which we'll tell you in a second, has been arrested for threatening to torture and kill employees of the company he says overran him with false promises of a larger...
Yeah, thing.
You know.
Right, yeah.
Anybody that gets email, you know.
Right.
Charles Boher, B-O-O-H-E-R.
I think I got the same email.
44 years old, was arrested and released on $75,000 bond for making repeated threats to Canadian company DM Medical, DM Contact Management. Boher said he tried to ask these company to provide him, I'm sorry, he tried to ask the company that provides only reliable, medically approved enhancements to stop bothering him.
Mm-hmm.
But the situation only got worse. The Sunnyvale, California man could spend up to 5 years in prison.
Yeah, can you believe that?
Could be slapped with a $250,000 fine.
Yeah, be careful what you say.
Well, you
can
know.
Do.
No
threats.
I mean, you know, mortgage payments, that's one thing. We can lower your mortgage payment.
Yeah.
But some people get a little, excuse the pun, touchy when you try to, you know, tell them they need to enlarge something.
Yeah, exactly. So again,
how do they know?
Those of you who spam, we will not retaliate.
No.
But we don't like it, and we think
prefer it not.
You're a low life for doing it.
And
thank
my
you very
my
much.
Spam blocker will meet your spam head on.
Yeah,
and do battle
behind the alley
and do battle in my spam inbox and outbox.
That's very good. It's a good place to do it. It's probably the only place to do it too. As a matter of fact,
here's
Patrick Meyer on the Advertising Show.
Welcome to Understanding the Future Now. It's the Marketing Insider featuring Patrick Meyer.
Most boards do not have a marketing person on their board, and yet marketing is all about driving brand and business growth. How is that possible? Let me give you an example. I'm on a board, just joined it recently. I came into my first meeting and said I'm going to lay back, lower profile. I asked one or two simple questions and was astounded that there was no growth mandate, growth imperatives clearly outlined for the entire organization. The people around the table, God bless them, were more financial, more operating oriented, but no marketing. And in many cases, on boards, you don't even find someone with strong sales background. So, here's my challenge to you. If you're a CEO, then for sure you want to put a senior marketer onto your board. If you're a CMO, what you want to do is get your vision, your core growth strategies, and your story up in front of your CEO and the board. If you're an agency, no matter what level, you want to raise the question, how does this connect to driving the business forward? What is the growth mandate and the core growth strategies going forward? And then focus on how do you connect to that vision in everything you do. If you're a small company, an agency, it's just as important what you do every day. Do you have a core growth strategy that you're focused on? And lastly, let's hope we get more marketing people onto the boards of big companies and small companies.
You've been listening to The Marketing Insider, heard every week here on The Advertising Show. Join us next week for more insight into the future of marketing.
This is Patrick Meyer from Fusion 5. And remember, the marketing revolution has begun.
He always reminds us of that, you know? It's a good thing, too, in case we forget.
That it's begun?
Yeah, it's begun.
Mm-hmm.
It has begins. It's actually en route.
You know, it's probably true. A lot of people sitting on a board right now at a major corporation, a lot of them don't have a clue about marketing.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate.
Yeah, really.
Who was it? Jack Trout.
Apparently Roy didn't.
Yeah. Jack Trout many months ago said, marketing is too important to be handled by the marketing department.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, the CEO and C-level executives need to be involved. And
right.
I think that's something that is lacking in a lot of companies today.
On the way in just a few minutes, he's warmed up on CNN-FM, National Public Radio, PBS's Nightly Business Report. He's finally ready for
the advertising
show. Yeah. At least we hope he's ready.
Right.
He was training earlier today.
He was fasting. He was fasting, and I think he had some wheatgrass.
Well, that's not a good thing.
But he wasn't drinking it. He was smoking it.
You'll have to – don't say that. See, because Hank can hear us, but he can't talk back
yet
because we hear his mic turned off.
You know, if he's –
oh, well.
We knew that since he was on NPR and PBS's Nightly Business Report, we needed to pull him out of his rut and get him here on the real show.
In the real world
the real
of radio
thing.
Stuff,
yeah.
Broadcasting?
Yeah, none of this stuffy, you know, CNN-FN.
FN.
Or NPR. We need to get him out of his shell.
It's CNN-FN.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
Very good. So we'll have Hank on. He's the editor of Advertising Age's Madison and Vine. It's a brand new initiative. So we will find out more about that. We're gonna take a break here, believe it or not.
Well, let's do it.
I think probably we ought to wait for the music to start before we actually... Oh, there it goes. Okay, good. On the Advertising Show with Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth. Don't forget, we are live online, too, theadvertisingshow.com. That's where you can feed your questions, concerns, compliments, any kind of comments, advertisingshow.com. With Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth, back in just a minute with Hank Kim from Advertising Age.
You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth.
There's nothing like the face of a kid eating a Hershey bar. There's nothing like it you'll ever see. A face as happy as it can be. There's nothing like the face of a kid when he's munching on the greatest taste around.
Back on the Advertising Show is Ray Shillings along with Brad Forsyth. And our special guest today, as we said, this gentleman has warmed up on CNN-FM, National Public Radio, and PBS's nightly business report. And he's ready for the Advertising Show, ladies and gentlemen. Hank Kim, editor of Advertising Age's Madison and Vine. And he has played a key role in the launch of the Madison and Vine initiative. As editor of M&V, Kim has been responsible for coordinating Ad Age's editorial efforts in the print, interactive, and even the platform since August of 2002. And prior to that current role, Kim was the features editor at Ad Age Global. So he's been a busy guy. Hey, Hank, thanks for taking time out of your busy day to be with us here on the weekend for the Advertising Show.
Great to be here, fellas.
Hey, Hank, when you were with Ad Age Global, did you run up a lot of air miles on your
long-distance charges?
Yeah. Or you did that all from your New York office?
Well, you know, that's still under investigation, so I'm really not at liberty to discuss
it. You never worked for Enron, did you, Hank?
Yeah.
No? Okay, good.
Yeah.
Although they were considering placing me there as part of my work release program, but it didn't quite work out.
Is it true on your ankle bracelet that they have you wear that you have the Ad Age logo on there? Is there any truth to that?
Well, actually, you know, the Ad Age logo on my ankle?
Yeah, on the ankle bracelet.
Ankle bracelet.
Yeah, since the work release program that you're on.
Well, you know, actually, when I started doing Botox, I decided to sort of, like, shed the ankle bracelet and, you know, really streamline my appearance.
We mentioned to Linda Kaplan Thaler, who we had on last week, she had a endorsement of her book by James Carville, and both Ray and I thought that James Carville would be an excellent candidate as an endorsement for Botox with the squinty face and kind of his signature and so forth. She didn't agree with that. She didn't even want to touch that.
Carville did that thing for InPhone. Did you see those spots? Mm-mm. Those TV spots?
Mm-mm.
It was good.
Was it?
He's got some ugly
legs.
Did he
do a responsible drinking bit a few years ago with Heineken, in fact?
I think he might have. Did you happen to see those spots for InPhone by any chance?
I have not, actually.
They're quite good.
Well, James Carville, you know, Heineken's one of my favorite beers, but if I heard that James Carville was involved in that, I might have to shift to, you know, Pabst Blue Ribbon.
I like Pabst Blue Ribbon.
That's Ray. This
making
has been,
a comeback, actually.
Yeah, I hope so.
And this has been Beer Talk here on the Advertising Show.
Yeah, it's,
hey, let's jump
long
in.
Long ashes to you.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about your background in the agency world. How in the world did a guy that used to work at New York Shops, Bozell, Backer, Spielvogel, Amoretti, and Pierce, how'd you go from the agency business to deciding a career in journalism, Hank?
Well, it really wasn't my choice, fellas. You see, journalism is sort of the last haven for those who fail at everything else.
No.
And, you know, after being sort of drummed out of some of the most prestigious shops on Madison
Avenue. Funny, I thought that was multi-level marketing, Hank.
Sorry?
I thought that was multi-level marketing.
Well, I've actually, interestingly enough, I've tried that as well. You know,
okay.
I've done everything, you know. Circus Act, advertising.
Never ran a chain of radio stations, did you?
No, although that is something that, you know, that actually I would be open to. So if you're, I know you're neighbors with Mr. Mays down there, so I don't know.
If
he's got a gig, you know, I'm always open.
And for those that may not be aware, Mr. Hank Kim is talking about the Mays folks. That would be the father and the two children. That would be the executives with Clear Channel. Clear Channel Broadcasting, wonderful broadcasting company. If any of our stations and affiliates across the nation are Clear Channel stations, we say...
We love them.
We love them.
Yes.
Let's talk a little bit about Madison and Vine. You know, off the air before, Hank, we were talking about some of the proprietary issues surrounding the term Madison and Vine, and I think a lot of people today listening probably think of Madison Vine as more of a generic term, but yet it was a term that was coined by Crane Communications and I believe the folks there at Ad Age. Who was it in particular that came up with the term Madison Vine?
Madison Vine was coined by Scott Donatan, who is the editor of the entire Ad Age group, which encompasses the print edition, all of our online properties, and M&V, which is actually M&V is sort of a multi-platform deal. But anyway, yeah, it was coined by him, and it was a concept that was masterminded by Scott, and he sold it into our management. And It's been one of those things where we're sort of a victim of our own success insofar as that it's such a it's a very pithy, very evocative name, and it rolls off the tongue, and it also is very sort of iconic because it really does in a very pithy way sum up what the editorial coverage is rooted in, which is basically the marriage between the entertainment business and the marketing industry. And so when you come up with something that that has that sort of iconic connotation to it, it obviously is something that a lot of people are gonna latch on to. And so in the same way that Xerox and Kleenex and even TiVo, to a much smaller degree, has sort of come to connote an entire product category, Ad Age's Madison Vine has also been commoditized in that regard. And so a lot of people sort of use it liberally, and we have our army of barristers on it, and we're suing the hell out of everybody, just like the record industry is,
Well,
although we're a little bit we're a bit more noble, we don't go around suing 12-year-olds in dorm rooms, but
well, at least not yet.
Not yet.
Let me ask you something. So other than telling Ray and I to make sure and mention it is Advertising Age's Madison and Vine, what other other than maybe some potential legal action, is there something that you're doing from a marketing standpoint? Have a little over a minute left here, Hank, that you're doing to try to get away from the commoditization of the term Madison and Vine?
Well, in some ways, it's sort of an uphill battle that's probably never going to be won. And actually, we realize that by it becoming somewhat genericized, that we're still accruing the most benefit out of it because we have these three different platforms upon which we can continue to perpetuate the name as it relates to Advertising Age. We have the print edition. We have this online email newsletter, which is a subscription product that we successfully launched a year ago. And we also hold an annual conference in Beverly Hills, and we held the first one last February, and it was just an unqualified success that exceeded everybody's expectations. And so there are various channels for us to be able to continue to associate and continue to reinforce our ownership and proprietary relationship with the name. But of course, more often than not, it's probably going to be used in vain. But what are you going to do, right?
Well, yeah, and I guess I think it was P.T. Barnum that said, say what you will about me, just spell my name right.
Exactly.
Speaking of that event earlier in the year, I believe it was Steve Heyer, the CEO of Coca-Cola, that was one of the keynote speakers at that event, if I'm recalling correctly, Hank, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, and that he gave quite a...
Ray, that Alzheimer's medicine is actually working.
Actually, this is Brad, but that's okay.
Oh, Brad, sorry.
Yeah, we're in stereo.
And that would be appropriate. Yeah.
Yes, well, thank you.
Brad has the Alzheimer's medicine.
And I'm the one with hair. Anyway, no, I'm kidding, Ray. We both have hair.
I have more black hair than you, pal.
Yeah. Well, after the break, I want to ask you about Steve Heyer's speech, which I think was quite innovative in what he had to say earlier in the year, and see where we are right now with all of the predictions that he made about the convergence of entertainment and advertising, and we'll do that right after the break, Hank.
So our special guest, Hank Kim, the shy and pithy Hank Kim, editor of Advertising Age's Madison and Vine, and we're going to take a break here. We got the wacky world of marketing coming up in just a moment with our executive producer, Bruce Abbott. We've got, later on this hour, Badvertising.
And you're sitting so close to me, Hank thinks you're me.
I know. No, where?
Could you scoot over, please?
No, thank you.
Get your hand off
God,
my leg.
There's a glass between us. There we go. Just a minute. We'll be back with more of Hank Kim and, of course, Ray Shillings and Brad Forsythe on The Advertising Show. Don't go anywhere.
And now it's time for the Wacky World of Marketing.
Wacky World of Marketing.
Here's your host, Bruce Abbott.
Our wacky update heads to Moscow, where pay toilets, not unusual, but in school? Yeah, students at a high school in a southern Russian city had to do more than raise their hands and ask for permission to go to the bathroom. They had to fork over cash. NTV television reported school officials instituted a plan to charge pupils for toilet trips in order to pay for repairs that were needed after students vandalized bathroom fixtures. Now, city education authorities quickly put a stop to that practice, but the network broadcast part of what it had said was an amateur video taken in a school hallway showed a boy asking a cleaning woman whether he could use the bathroom. Her reply was, Hey! And that, my friends, is the wacky world of marketing.
This program was written and produced by Bruce Abbott, executive producer of The Advertising Show. Join us next time when we uncover the strange, the bizarre, and, unfortunately, the true wacky world of marketing. Make informed decisions about your company's advertising strategy. This is The Advertising Show.
We here at the ad agency feel this commercial is provocative, motivating, and really classeroo. Now, what do you think, sir?
Only one shoe? Forshai makes over 256 different styles. Show them all! Big, big! What about the craftsmanship? Even our laces are better.
Have they shoes?
Oh, why don't we show a huge centipede wearing all the floor shot shoes?
I like that. That could be a musical.
No, that's not an actual session, a creative session. That's an actual commercial for Florsheim. And what a great look at the advertising agency process. It's not at all like that. Just like radio is not at all like WKRP was.
Although I thought for sure when I first saw that, I had worked at that station before.
Oh, you did?
Well, kind of like
you
that.
You sure did, and
yeah.
So did I.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I think you were Venus Flytrap. I mean,
Venus. You mean Venus Flytrap?
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Sorry,
Venus Flytrap. On the Advertising Show, Ray Shillings, Brad Forsyth, and our special guest is Hank Kim, who is editor of Advertising Asia's Madison and Vine. So, Hank, who would have you been on the radio, possibly? Gordon Jump, possibly, or no?
Funny enough, Gordon Jump hails from my hometown.
Which is where?
Dayton, Ohio.
Oh. Which is now hailed from your hometown, didn't he?
Yeah.
He just recently passed away.
Yes,
too,
he did. So. Maytag Man is no longer.
Yeah. Well, you know, Ray,
that icon.
Ray's from Cleveland, so you guys are probably, you know, neighbors in some sort, manner, or whatever.
Dayton. When it comes to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, yeah, that's true.
Yes, Wright-Patterson Air Force Base.
Oh, yeah. If you listen real closely, you can hear other people listening around the nation tuning out right now. Before the break, we talked about your event that you had first quarter of this year, and I'm going to go from memory here, but I believe Steve Hires, Chief Operating Officer of Coca-Cola, entitled it something along the lines of Manifesto for Advertising in the 21st Century or whatever, and you can clarify that. But basically it was Steve's take on, and he has an advertising and marketing background before being the chief executive at Coca-Cola. But Steve had a lot to say about the convergence of entertainment and advertising as it relates to Madison and Vine. Talk a little bit about what he had to say during that event and during his speech and where you think we are today with that. And did you agree with what Steve had to say?
Yeah, he had some very provocative things to say. Because it was a keynote address, obviously there's going to be it's going to be rooted in rhetoric. Or I'm sorry, not rooted in rhetoric. I mean, it's actually rooted in a lot of fundamental issues facing the industry. But obviously there was a lot of rhetorical flourishes, and you know that he instituted in his speech for effect. But his basic argument was that in this age of media clutter and fragmentation, regardless of what your product is, whether you're selling tires or diapers or fast food or even if you're selling hip hop or entertainment content, everybody is basically stretched thinner, and the net effect of all of this fragmentation and clutter is that the traditional ways of reaching your target audience, depending on what your product is, and you know, much of that has been really been centered around the hegemony of network television. Mm-hmm. And you know, back in the day, when there was three broadcast networks, and before cable had really reared its head, and before there was anything remotely resembling the internet, it was very easy to be able to reach the masses. Now it's become much more of a niche play, and so paid media advertising just doesn't deliver as much bang for the buck as it used to. So now marketers have been forced to try to come up with alternative channels or methods. And so increasingly they're starting to really leverage entertainment content to the point where they're trying to actually embed themselves. And that can run the gamut from everything from product placement in television to actually placing your product in music videos, which is what Mazda recently did with a very steamy video that Britney Spears just put out to promote her new album, with revisiting of her lip lock with the other queen of pop, her predecessor Madonna, on the MTV Video Music Awards. I'm sure both of you have that in your heavy rotation for video viewing.
Not only that, but Ray and I tried to do that, and we didn't get any publicity.
it was
ridiculous.
You got to get out of the Bible Belt, I think, to do that. Right?
That's true. Let me ask you. You were talking about. Let me interject real quick.
Sure.
Do you think Steve Heyer and Coca-Cola has walked the walk? I know he talked the talk back in.
That's an interesting question, and the jury's still out on that. I mean, he certainly talked the talk, but in terms of actually delivering on those results and going beyond the rhetoric, I've heard mixed things. I think, one of the issues is that when you're talking about a company as monolithic and as Byzantine as Coca-Cola is, it requires really almost a fundamental change in mindset. And it helps that they've got a guy at the top who's basically, the heir apparent to Doug Daft. And, unless something really bizarre happens, Steve Heyer is basically the anointed one. So when you have, some revolutions happen, bottom up, but oftentimes in corporate America, it requires somebody, who has the ultimate authority to really set the tone. So Coke has that advantage, but at the same time, you're really trying to incorporate a new mindset, a new way of looking at things, and sometimes that takes a long time. And so I guess it's really not fair to pass judgment on him just yet. He delivered that speech in February. We're drawing upon the one-year anniversary of that speech.
Let's take a break here for just a moment on The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings, Brad Forsyth, and our special guest Hank Kim, editor of Advertising Age's Madison and Vine.
Make informed decisions about your company's advertising strategy. This is The Advertising Show.
Cleans all bathroom surfaces up to 50% faster.
Use Ajax, boom, boom. The foaming cleanser.
Boom, 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 boom. Get things clean just like a whiz.
It's The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings, Brad Forsyth, and we're a squeaky clean kind of a show.
Mm-hmm.
And if we're not, it's cleaned up usually with some good Ajax and a little scrub in there.
Colgate's.
Right?
Ajax.
Uh-huh.
Didn't know
Wonder if they use the same stuff in their toothpaste.
Wonder if they still make it.
I don't know.
Wonder if
that
was a pre-bald guy.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Hank Kim, our special guest, editor of Advertising Age's Madison and Vine with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth on The Advertising Show.
Before the break, I think I just wrap up the Coca-Cola Steve Heyer deal by saying the wheels of change, I'm sure, grind very slowly at a company as large as Coca-Cola. And I guess we will continue to see Coca-Cola evolve and see if their chief, Steve Heyer, is behind what he said back at the Madison and Vine event earlier in this year. I want to ask you, Hank, especially for our younger listeners out there, a lot of people, I believe, think that product placement is more of a recent marketing effort, yet with all the reality shows, et cetera. But yet product placement goes back decades. Give us some kind of historical perspective on the origins of product placement, if you would, please.
Well, product placement really evolved at the dawn of television, because when TV arrived, General Sarnoff over at RCA and his brethren, when they launched this new medium, it was actually on the shoulders of brand marketers. If you recall, Milton Berle had this little thing called the Texaco Star Theater. Mm-hmm. Procter & Gamble financed daytime dramas, and thus the moniker soap opera was born. So it's really something that goes back to the beginning of television, and But it is something that really is, it's sort of a back to the future scenario. It's nothing new. It's just something that has increased resonance in this day and age because of the issues of clutter and fragmentation and difficulties in reaching people, as I referred to in the previous segment.
I guess it could be argued that product placement even could go further than television, go back to the golden age of radio, couldn't it, Hank?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, actually, that's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
For those that may not understand the process, take our audience, if you would, through how a company might go about a product placement for their product or service or brand?
Well, a lot of it evolves out of existing relationships that their advertising agencies, specifically in many cases, the media buyers have with the TV networks. Every year there's this big hoo-ha in New York in May called the Upfronts. And what that is a 3-day period where all the major broadcast networks and increasingly over the years the cable networks have also adapted this mode, where they basically it's a beauty show. They trot out their new fall lineups and based upon these presentations, a flurry of negotiations occur in which the media buyers that control the $1 billion in advertising budgets actually place their media buys for the fall season. And so some of the product placement or product integration, as it's more sort of and that's sort of the newfangled moniker, sort of gives it a little bit more dignity than product placement, which has over the years has, you know, somewhat of a negative connotation. But anyway, that's when a lot of the product integration or product placement will be negotiated. But sometimes they're done more on an ad hoc basis, and also it doesn't necessarily have to come from the media buying people. A lot of times, an idea for a brand association can come from anywhere. It can come from a talent agency. It could come from an independent producer. It can come from a variety of different places and different anybody who's involved in this communications industry, this entertainment industry, is affected by this. So that's one of the more interesting things about my coverage is that basically, anybody that has anything to do with the communications business is really involved or affected by this whole trend.
And I guess that there are actually a proliferation of product placement companies that have come about in recent times that claim to help facilitate that process as
well.
That's
correct. Product placement used to be sort of an old school kind of business. It used to be a sort of, with liquid lunch, golf course relationship kind of thing, where product placement companies would have warehouses full of product, and they would have relationships with studio prop masters, and so whenever a production needed a can of soda or a new Pontiac, they would just dial up the old product placement company, and the guy would ship again, it would be set up in a warehouse, and they'd ship whatever the product is to the
seems,
set.
Seems
now,
we need
these,
to, well, hold on one second, Hank.
Yeah, sure.
What we're going to do is take a break here. We're not done with Hank yet. We're going to do a segment here or two and then bring him back next hour for more here. So we'll be back with Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth on The Advertising Show. Stay with us.
Simplifying the complex world of advertising. To reach Ray and Brad with your questions, log on to theadvertisingshow.com. This is The Advertising Show.
Raid here! Raid! 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 Raid!
Yes, Raid! New bug killer discovery from Johnson's Wax. Raid contacts and kills all kinds of bugs indoors. Raid hunts them down like radar.
This is The Advertising Show with Ray Shillins along with Brad Forsyth. Kind of makes you wonder what was in Johnson's Wax if they can develop to make it a bug killer, huh?
True.
You wouldn't want to walk in your bare feet, I guess.
I wonder why they didn't combine those. With the wax, you also have the bug repellent.
That's a doggone good idea.
Yeah, well, and there would be your dog would be gone if you did that, probably. Hey, it was great having Hank on. I'm going to ask him next hour when we have him on about the recent mention about ABC developing a new partnership with media buying company Mindshare, where they are going to jointly develop and produce shows. I say jointly, Mindshare is actually going to develop and produce shows for ABC. And there's a lot of people that are wondering about, you know, this new relationship and what impact it might have on the content for future program development.
Well, it certainly will make a difference, that's for
sure. I'm sure Hank will have something to say about that.
That's good. And, but he can't now because, again, he's on hold until next hour.
It's the best time to talk about him.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. A great guest, though.
He was a great guest. You know, he reminds me of another guest we had on a few years ago.
Donnie Deutsch?
No. Roger Dodson.
Mary Lou Quinlan?
You could ask him just a question, then you and I can go get our dry cleaning, come back. Okay, so now the second question.
Exactly.
He's got some good stuff.
This is good. We got some bad stuff today, advertising-wise, and what we do is each week we go back and forth. Mostly bad, though.
Not always.
Okay, mostly.
It's the holiday season.
Oh, it is. Okay.
But we're going to do bad again.
Okay. we'll do bad today.
And now it's time for the badvertising item of the week.
So what you got that's not so good but is not so bad?
Well,
today?
You know, every year we talk about holiday advertising. And this is a local deal that happened to me, but it's also usable throughout the entire nation, if you think about it.
Yeah.
Last Saturday night, my wife and I were at an Irish pub late in the evening, and they had several televisions on covering sports, and I'm looking up at one and noticed an NBA game.
Mm-hmm.
And during one of the commercials, there was a spot for a well-known local restaurant in our home market of Houston, and the local restaurant was promoting their special Thanksgiving buffet.
Yes.
That's on Saturday night.
Right.
Thanksgiving would have been 2 days before that.
Right.
Now, I wanted to make sure that I hadn't been drinking too much, so I ordered another Guinness. And damn if that commercial wasn't still
on.
Yeah, but you know, what we have, and I've got a double header today because this is kind of funny that this happened. And before I go forward, let me mention that this particular restaurant that was advertising, it's part of a publicly owned company. So attention shareholders and stakeholders. Is this where you want to be putting your money?
You've got to be kidding me.
I'm going to fast forward 24 hours. Sunday evening, I'm watching a Sunday night NFL game on ESPN, Tampa Bay, as I recall, in Jacksonville. And midway through the fourth quarter, a local car dealership, again, in our home market of Houston.
I saw that one, too.
Is offering car buyers a free turkey with the purchase of their new vehicle.
Yep.
And then at the end of the spot, the general manager, the proverbial car dealer spot where the GM's doing his own shtick there. Wishes everyone a happy Thanksgiving. The car dealership, Ray, publicly owned company by one of them. I'm not going to say who, but by a major publicly traded company. So as we've discussed here on the advertising show many times over the past 2-3 years, agencies or advertisers must make sure that if they're going to schedule holiday-sensitive, time-sensitive commercials, you got to make sure that you look at your calendar and figure out what happens while the station is closed and can't take new scheduling instructions, and are my spots embarrassing the hell out of my company?
Uh-huh.
Am I suggesting to consumers that if I'm this loose with my advertising, am I going to lose your keys when you come to my car dealership?
Yeah, no kidding.
Or am I going to serve you, you know, an item that you didn't order? I mean, I think it reflects on the company. It's not just a waste of dollars.
Oh, yeah.
It's a reflection on, I think, all the way back to the brand and the brand of the company. And you begin to look at that and say, well, it's a sloppily run company.
Oh, absolutely.
So next this Christmas or next year, make a little note, folks. If you're going to be doing any kind of holiday advertising, pay attention to your calendar.
I love it. Oh, we didn't think about what to run afterward. Maybe we should.
Yeah.
Or the account executive who hasn't taken care of the account.
Or you
my God.
You know, or you could be real sly and say, we're having an after Thanksgiving sale. You know, but it's so silly when people do that. They waste their money.
Yeah. I saw, like you said, I saw the car spot.
Yeah.
Didn't see the other one, though. How about that?
You know, and it's an interesting deal because what really jumped out at me is they're both publicly owned companies. So, you know, it's not some mom and pop shop that doesn't know what they're
somebody
doing.
Really fell asleep at the wheel, so
yeah,
to speak.
I think so.
That's bad.
So
we've got Hank Kim on the way next hour. We've also got, let's see, Mary Lou Quinlan's coming up. We've got Andy Borowitz next hour, another Wacky World of Marketing feature as well. And, of course, some great conversation with Hank, who is editor of Advertising Age's Madison and Vine. And as you said, we ask Hank the questions, and Hank just goes and we get our dry cleaning.
You want me to pick yours up next hour?
Yeah, that'll be fine.
Okay.
It's no problem.
All right. Drive-thru still, right?
Congratulations to Deutsch, New York. He got a $100 million Tylenol account. Unfortunately, Donnie got it in trade.
Yeah.
So, you know, what's he going to do?
Donnie doesn't want the cash from that because it'll put him into a new tax bracket. No, he's already in the top one, I think.
the one that's not even invented yet.
Right.
You know, man, oh, man. $100 million to sell Tylenol.
Yeah, that'll give you
that'll
a headache.
That'll work, won't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I could find a way to do that.
Oh, yeah.
Bad. Anyway, remember, we've got the Advertising Age, or the Advertising Show website, advertisingshow.com is where you go to talk to us throughout the week. Advertising Show is brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. If you'd like to, and we insist you do, visit online at adage.com. The Advertising Show with Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth is a Big Radio Midgets production, and we'll be back next hour.
Welcome to The Advertising Show, America's only radio program focusing on advertising, media, marketing, product development, branding, new media, sales and customer relations. Stay with us for entertaining marketing discussion and our special guest interview. Now, here are your hosts, Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth.
It's officially hour two here on The Advertising Show, and we'll continue our interview with Hank Kim, editor of Advertising Age's Madison and Vine, M&V, a pithy publication.
Yes.
The Advertising Show is being brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine, also a pithy publication. Visit online at adage.com. Advertising Show is a Big Radio Midgets production, for sure.
You're walking a tightrope there.
Am I?
That pithy.
Pithy. Exactly. I just like that word.
You do.
Plethora.
True. Yeah.
Anyway, we've got Mary Lou Quinlan on the way, and what is Mary Lou talking about? A home improvement.
Really?
Yeah, she has something for you, too.
Well, you've just been through a major home improvement.
No, it's still going on.
Renovation.
Still going on.
Yeah, I could have told you that last summer when you started.
I want the tile. Where's the tile?
Yeah.
Please call me, okay?
You take the
paid for it yet, though. That's
well,
good.
Yeah, you take the end date of whenever they say it's going to be done, multiply that times 14
months.
Weeks. Yeah, months, and you're close.
Yeah. So we've got Mary Lou on the way. Home improvement is her topic today. The wacky world of marketing. We've also got an Andy Borowitz bit coming.
You know, and if anybody's wanting to know about product placement, Hank Kim, as you mentioned, Ray, Advertising Age's Madison and Vine editor, he has great knowledge about product placement and the convergence of entertainment and advertising out in Hollywood and elsewhere. And we'll jump into all of that here in the next segment.
That would be the plan.
Yeah, you know, if I were to say Britney, Beyonce, of course you're thinking Pepsi, right?
Yeah, I guess. Well, oh, yeah, right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, guess what?
What?
They changed.
What did they do?
Well, they decided to change their focus and tagline for its latest new campaign. And the tagline, Pepsi, it's the cola. You know, it's like, okay, we've spent enough money on Britney and Beyonce. Let's change it and make everybody get confused.
Pepsi, it's the cola?
Yeah, Pepsi, it's the cola. Highlights the new soft drink that goes with everything from food to fun. TV spots recently on primetime and NFL telecast were seen on programs such as Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. Maybe you saw that a week ago.
Yeah.
And outdoor ads on billboards and bus stops will be launching as well. BBDO New York, of course, handles that. But I thought it was interesting that a major company like Pepsi, who had just spent some big bucks on some big-time celebrities, which is, you know, Phil Dusenberry started that years ago with Michael Jackson, which I guess you couldn't pay anybody to take Michael right now.
Poor Michael.
Well, it depends on what you're selling.
That's exactly right.
Anyway, so look for a new campaign from Pepsi. It's the cola.
It's the cola.
Yeah.
It's not the diet cola.
Well,
it's just the cola.
They're trying to do what Madison and Vine is staying away from. They're trying to become generic. Pepsi, it's the cola.
We've got Hank Kim on the way. Right now, let's get into to Mary Lou Quinlan.
And now. Now, stay tuned for What Women Want. Insights from listening to your most powerful customer. Here's Mary Lou Quinlan.
Have you seen all the home improvement ads lately? Notice the new stars of those commercials? They're women. Say goodbye to the handyman special with warehouses catering to the guy with the tool belt yanking his pants below the equator. According to research, 80% of home improvement decisions are made by women. And the category has gone Hollywood. I mean, look at Trading Spaces, HGTV. There's even a do-it-yourself network. Check out the stores near you. Stop by, and you'll see dozens of women carrying swatches, lugging wrenches, and generally tearing up the house. Retail giants Lowe's and Home Depot are slugging it out, each trying to make their stores more female-friendly. Hey, Brad, who's the one in your house saying, you know what we ought to do with the family room? Right, it's your wife. It's not just about the ads. Appealing to women means redesigning the store layouts so that women can see what goes with what. It means training the sales force to cut it with the techno lingo and start offering classes about how to lay tile. Listening to women can make things better for men, too. For example, what bugs you about paint? The buckets are heavy to carry, the lids are a killer to open, and when you go to pour it, it spills all over the place. With a spot featuring all women, Dutch Boy Paint introduced something new. Paint that comes in a lightweight plastic can, has a screw-off lid, and a pouring spout. Is it marketing to women? Maybe. I think it's smart marketing, period. Guess it pays to listen to women. Maybe your business could use a dose of that, too.
This has been What Women Want from The Advertising Show with your host, Mary Lou Quinlan, CEO of Just Ask a Woman. To learn more about what women want, visit justaskawoman.com.
This is Mary Lou Quinlan reminding you, if you want to know what women want, stop selling and start listening.
Great feature, too, and it's true with that. And as far as the answer to the question, Brad would say call the plumber.
Well.
Or call the handyman guy.
You change one word in what she said. Do you know what we want to do with the living room or in the living room? And it's me saying that.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
But
as far as with the living room, it's like we need to replace the back door.
Yeah, but
the dogs ate it again.
She makes a good point. Women are head of household will influence a lot of buying decisions that a lot of marketers, I think, miss or overlook, and they can influence those purchases, major purchases, in a big way.
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah,
great feature here on The Advertising Show. It's Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth and Hank Kim. We're just about to get into hour two of the conversation with Hank. Hank is editor of Advertising Age's M&V, Madison and Vine. And we'll do that here in just a few minutes. Go right ahead.
Well, you know, I don't know if you heard about this, Ray, but Lamar Outdoor Advertising was not impressed with PETA's latest vegetarian medicine. Motorists in Jefferson City, Missouri shouldn't expect to see the new campaign anytime soon. The outdoor company has refused to post ads from the activist groups depicting an overweight boy eating a hamburger as child abuse.
What?
The ad's tagline, feeding kids meat is child abuse. Fight the fat. Instead, PETA's urging parents to offer their children a low-fat vegetarian diet. Now, as stupid as the strategy is for PETA to go up with a billboard like that,
right.
I don't know. How do you feel about Lamar deciding to play judge and jury and censoring PETA from sending out their message? I don't know about you, but frankly, I think it would be more of an embarrassment to PETA themselves to go ahead and put it up and say, you know, you want to be a part of an organization that thinks that way?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, if you're gonna play, you know, censor, once you flip on the TV in Jefferson City during daytime and see what Jerry Springer's doing.
Yeah, no kidding.
I mean, come on.
Yeah, that's insane.
It's rare that you hear about an outdoor company playing censor like that. But, you know, I think it's a silly campaign.
Well, absolutely.
Feeding kids meat is child abuse. That's stupid.
Yeah,
but yet, on the other hand, by putting it up, aren't you helping PETA show their, at least, stupid side, I suppose?
Yeah, I think so, yeah, absolutely.
So they're saying, no, we're not going to let people see that.
Well, that's weird.
It is weird, isn't it?
That's almost like the SUV campaign that they did.
What would Jesus drive?
Yeah, exactly.
We've always said a donkey.
A Hummer.
A donkey? A donkey with a bunch of people walking behind them. But you don't want to do that on the freeway.
No. If you do, stay to the side, please. Thank you very much.
Or the bicycle lane if it's a secondary road.
Okay, don't give your kids meat.
It's child abuse. Fight the
child fat. Abuse.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, in that case, I don't know, McDonald's was popular when you and I were young.
A lot cheaper, too.
Yeah, 25-cent hamburgers.
Shoot, 25 is 15.
Well, you're older than me.
Well, not by much.
Well, I'm just saying.
By a dime.
Yeah, by a dime. Two nickels.
In just a minute, Hank Kim, editor of Advertising Age's Madison and Vine, will join us again for some lively segments here, three segments to be exact, on The Advertising Show. Stay with us. We'll be back in just a minute.
Make your advertising dollars work smarter. You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth.
Pee-wee Reese has a way with Dodger rookies or Sandlot youngsters.
Pee-wee, you do a lot of work with boys.
Not work, Al. I like baseball and kids. I enjoy helping teenagers start right.
Oh, that's around shaving age. And you give them pointers on personal appearance, too?
Yes. A boy has more self-respect when he's clean-shaved. I tell him to use a Gillette razor, Al.
You said it. The Gillette Super Speed.
Now, look, there's a good person to support that brand, Pee-wee Reese, right?
Wholesome individual.
Clean-shaven.
And the copy said, a boy has more respect when he shaves.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly.
We had that bikini shaver on last week.
Exactly.
That was not very respectful.
Hank Kim, our special guest, I hope you were with us last hour, but if not, Hank is senior editor at Advertising Age. He's played a key role in the launch of Advertising Age's Madison and Vine. And Hank, welcome back to Hour 2. Glad to have you here this weekend.
Glad to be with you, fellas.
Hey, Hank, if someone is not familiar with Advertising Age's Madison and Vine, talk a little bit about your newsletter. We'll get a shameless plug out of the way. But I think a lot of people out there might be interested in learning how they could subscribe to your newsletter. And it's daily, isn't it, Hank?
Or almost daily? No, I'm too lazy to do it daily.
Weekly?
Brad, it's weekly, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's weekly. It goes out every Wednesday. So the last issue came out a few days ago, December the 3rd. And it's basically, you know, it's every week. It's a snapshot of what went down the prior 7 days in terms of deals and attempts to sort of create a new paradigm in marketing. And, you know, it's there's a lot of actually it's funny, we're joking about the frequency, but it actually probably could go daily because I think there's enough going on where you know, if not now, certainly I think if like deals like this ABC Mindshare thing continue to that you made reference to earlier continue to happen, you know, we could actually start to see a real sort of ratcheting up in terms of the level of activity.
Well, a lot of other publications are getting in on your act, Hank. Yeah, certainly I see a lot of coverage in Wall Street Journal in the Marketplace section, and I subscribe to your weekly newsletter, and I should misspoke there in saying that it was daily. It seems like it's daily just because I guess I usually print it out and take it home and read it, and it's something that you want to print out and read as opposed to try to read it online, because there's just a lot of information there. If someone wanted to get a bit of a sample or see some of the content, I know it's a paid prescription or subscription, I should say. Is there a way to get a little bit of a sense of what you do without becoming a subscriber, or how do you go about that?
Well, there's actually we've run a number of sort of introductory free trial offers. I would just suggest if anybody has really any interest in the product to get in touch with me directly at Advertising Age in New York, and you know, I'd be happy to direct them. Oftentimes people are interested in specific topics or specific companies, and I could certainly steer them.
Can I give out your email address?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, so I guess it's hkim at crane.com.
At Crane, that's correct. Yeah, Crane. C-R-A-I-N.
Right. C-R-A-I-N.com. H-Kim, K-I-M, at crane.com. He does enjoy spam.
And I don't suffer from spam raids.
No.
So.
Okay.
Don't have to worry about that.
He's got the
no,
big
sure.
blocker going, too.
I'm going to forward all mine to you, Hank.
No, I didn't say that. No.
Last hour, before as we wrapped up the hour, I mentioned a news item that just came out. ABC's new partnership with media buyer Mindshare gave concern to many Hollywood creatives over the growing influence of advertisers in the creative process. Mindshare will pitch, develop, and produce shows for ABC, and will get the chance to incorporate advertisers via cross-marketing and product placements. So what do you think of all of this, Hank? Is there reason to be concerned?
I guess it depends on who you ask that question to. I think it's an interesting arrangement. And in effect, if you really get beyond the rhetoric and the hype and all the chest beating, at its core, what it is it's basically about networks and media buyers who represent advertisers. While they've always had an ongoing dialogue, this is about sort of taking that dialogue and and branching out. And what they're really trying to do is, because it's a very open-ended, non-exclusive arrangement, which I think some of the coverage, initial coverage, didn't really make clear. But it's a very sort of open-ended agreement. It's not Mindshare, for example, is not bound to just develop projects with ABC, and ABC in turn is not just bound to Mindshare. Obviously, there's no way they could run a business that way. So mm-hmm. I think, but what it does is that the two parties have decided to create a framework, and a lot of it involves how these deals would be financed and divvy, and how the spoils basically would be divvied up. Because a lot of times what happens is that when these things are done on a one-off level, as Alex Swala, the president of ABC, noted in the story that we ran on Wednesday, is that, the negotiations are very complex and can become very entangled in terms of the financial aspects of it. And so what they've done is this deal at its core is about creating a financial framework so that way they don't have to reinvent the wheel every time.
Mm-hmm. Well, and certainly the president, Alex Swala of ABC TV, is quoted as saying, and I'm suspect of this, the development, meaning the program development process, won't be distorted by this act at all. People with good ideas will come in with or without Mindshare. ABC does have creative control. At the end of the day, what goes out over the air is under their complete control. Now, I don't know about you, Hank, but all you do is look back on some of the reality shows recently, and you see Coca-Cola with the red couch and some other things. And even though this is going to be scripted, I believe, scripted programs mm-hmm. as opposed to reality shows. But, excuse me if I'm wrong, but hasn't the advertisers and the almighty dollar influenced program development in one form or another?
It has, and you do have good reason to sort of take a skeptical stance. And I think it's really going to be interesting to track to see how it all shakes out. But certainly, your point about trying to attempt this in the scripted realm—it's they're doing it in reality programming can also be fraught with error. I mean, there's been a lot of examples of trying to integrate products into reality shows that have ranged from the ridiculous to the sublime. Mm-hmm. American Idol, you referenced, there was a six-part reality show on NBC this summer called The Restaurant, where some of the product integration was very sort of ham-fisted. Mm-hmm. But certainly when you take it into the scripted realm, you're adding a whole other dynamic, and that is that the scripted realms, half-hour situation comedies and hour dramas, are really the purview of writers and producers, whereas reality, writers and producers that are actually a lot more sort of, I guess, precious about the creative process, whereas in reality television,
whatever goes.
Yeah, there's a lot more opportunity to be able to infiltrate brands without upsetting sort of the narrative thread, because most of that is really the actual storyline evolves in the editing room. Well, reality TV is really an editing medium.
Yeah, and a sidebar, since you bring up The Restaurant, it was I think it was the first reality program that was actually developed and financed by the product placements and delivered to NBC as a free program. And I want to talk a little bit more about the difference in the new business model that Mindshare is bringing to ABC. We're going to hold that for after the break.
That would be a good thing, because if we tried to do it during the break, nobody'd hear it.
Oh, that's true.
So we probably ought to wait on that. Oops. Hey, did you see, speaking of reality, not reality shows, but placement with American Express getting onto the Wheel of Fortune, giving away blue cars, turning the wheel blue.
We wrote about that.
Oh,
yeah.
Did you?
It's kind of interesting. We're going to take a break here. The Wacky World of Marketing coming up next. And then we continue our conversation with Hank Kim, who is editor of Advertising Age's Madison and Vine. It's Ray Shillins and Brett Forsyth. Wacky World of Marketing later on this hour. We've got Andy Borowitz taking some time out from his weekly appointment with Soledad and Bill, right? So we'll be back in just a minute. Stay with us.
And now, it's time for the Wacky World of Marketing.
Wacky World of Marketing.
Here's your host, Bruce Abbott.
Our wacky update heads to Russia, where luxury chocolate bars featuring a portrait of Vladimir Putin have gone on sale in Moscow and are quite popular. The
the bars carry a portrait of the Russian president made from dark and white chocolate and using fruit juice for coloring. In fact, a Russian daily newspaper reports the bars are not only a symbol of Putin, but of well-being and happiness. Putin, of course, enjoys massive popularity in Russia. Some recent polls have said 80% of the country back him as president. Companies have tried to cash in by producing a range of products in the past, from rugs to sunflower seeds carrying his portrait or name, but the chocolate just might be a success. And that, my friends, is the wacky world of marketing.
This program was written and produced by Bruce Abbott, executive producer of The Advertising Show. Join us next time when we uncover the strange, the bizarre, and unfortunately, the true wacky world of marketing. Simplifying the complex world of advertising. To reach Ray and Brad with your questions, log on to theadvertisingshow.com. This is The Advertising Show.
Oh, Mom! Look, Mom, no cavities!
Oh, Debbie, really? Dennis says no new cavities. Golly, what a difference that Crest toothpaste has made.
Yes, Crest is the toothpaste that works. Because Crest is the toothpaste with Floristan.
It's The Advertising Show. This is Ray Shillings along with Brad Forsyth. And Crest, do they have a floor product as well, possibly?
Yeah, well,
that's Swiffer.
Plax.
Right, exactly. It's our special guest, Hank Kim, editor of Advertising Age's Madison and Vine. And we had to take a break, but we're back for another couple segments here.
Yeah, just to wrap up, Hank, on the point of Mindshare and ABC getting together on some programming issues. And, of course, I'd like to remind everyone that Mindshare is owned by WPP Group, which is a huge holding company of many well-known advertising agencies, including, for example, Ogilvy and Mather. But what was interesting about the new business model, once the programs air, Mindshare and ABC, Ray, you'll find this interesting, will split the commercial time with Mindshare selling units directly to its clients, ABC selling directly to its advertisers, similar in many ways to syndication barter advertising model.
Oh,
so it's a new way of getting programming out there and making sure that the advertiser has some kind of greater integration into the process. I wanted to ask you, Hank, what's the craziest idea that you've ever heard of as it relates to a product placement?
Craziest idea.
Mm-hmm.
How about the most ambitious idea?
That'll do.
There is a guy in Los Angeles by the name of Matty Lesham, an independent TV producer. He and Michael Davies, and that name may ring a bell to some of your listeners. He was he's the guy from England who basically was responsible for bringing Who Wants to Be a Millionaire to these shores. And the two of them got together and created this concept called Live from Tomorrow, which was basically being pitched to networks and marketers as a commercial-free, totally advertiser-funded one-hour reality variety show. It's something that was very, very close to being set up at the WB, but things at the 11th hour sort of fell apart. And I think the reason that it's not completely dead, but it's certainly on life support in terms of the project seeing the light of day, although Matty would probably kill me for saying that. But sorry, Matty, it's true.
I remember it was a little over a year ago or so. I remember reading about that.
Yeah. I mean, it's an interesting idea. I give Matty actually a lot of credit for his enthusiasm and his efforts. And who knows, maybe it might get resurrected at some point in an altered form. But I think the reason why it didn't really happen was that I think although Pepsi was on board, I think they couldn't get enough marketers that were agreeable to ponying up the level of investment that they were going for to make it work, to make it financially feasible for the network. And that sort of in a microcosm is what scuttles a lot of deals or make a lot of deals difficult to pull off, is that it's got to make economic sense for everybody involved. And oftentimes, things can come to an impasse because of that.
I think they lacked any kind of, metric for going out and doing what you described, which was an non-traditional way of integrating a product. Let's talk a little bit for a second about your friend. I'm sure he's your friend, especially since he's been in the news lately, Ralph Nader. Now, certainly, I wanted to ask you, first of all, do you think that the integration of products in entertainment could become something that becomes regulated, such as what, you know, Ralph is wanting to see happen?
You know, so far, while the FTC did respond to Nader's petition or complaint, I would be very surprised if anything really comes out of it in terms of any level of regulatory, you know, any form of regulatory effort to do what Nader and his people are asking the networks to do.
So far. And for those not familiar with what Nader's proposing, go ahead and talk about that, Hank.
Well, basically, what Nader, again, the name of the organization is called Commercial Alert. They're based in Portland, Oregon, and what they're insisting via the FTC complaint is that any paid product placement be recognized as such in the show. And the argument from the creative community, from Hollywood and advertisers, is that, well, if you do that, you're completely destroying the rhythm and the texture of the programming, and it makes television unwatchable. And I think, actually, not to take sides, but I think that that's a very valid argument. I think that at the core is why this thing will not, again, I think it'll be, it's much to do about nothing. I mean, obviously, anything that Nader is a proponent of will get a lot of press and attention. But I think this one, unlike the whole search engine issue, where they were actually very successful in terms of that complaint, I think this one is falling on deaf ears.
Yeah, well, Ray and I did some research here on the advertising show, and we found that the last hoorah for Ralph was the Pinto, I think. So he needed something to latch onto. We also reported on his desire, or his organization's desire, to, in effect, want to flash on the screen, you are watching a product placement at this very moment. That kind of brings up a question that we've asked frequently. We have less than half a minute left. Do you think product placement is as effective today as it was, say, 10 years ago?
Well, I think there's certainly more of it now than there was 10 years ago.
Does that affect the effectiveness in 10 seconds?
I think it does, insofar as I think, again, you'll see everything, you know, you'll see, you know, the attempts at it will range, you know, widely from very effective, very contextual.
Let's hold the rest of that thought, Hank, in just a minute. We'll be back on the Advertising Show with more.
You're listening to the Advertising Show with Ray Shillins and Brad Forsythe.
Snap. What a happy sound. Snap is the happiest sound I've found. You may clap, rap, tap, slap, but snap makes the world go round. Snap, crackle, Rice Krispies. I say it's crackle, the crispy sound.
We're on the Advertising Show with you, Ray Shillins and Brad Forsythe, and our special guest is Hank Kim, editor of Advertising Age's Madison and Vine. And Snap, Crackle, and Pop joined us there, too.
Yeah, sorry we had to cut that short.
The cereal.
Yes. Sorry we had to cut that short, Hank. Let's go back to the question, and let me repose it in a different way. You know, gosh, 10, 15 years ago, we used to see Seinfeld take a particular cereal off of his shelf there, and little did most people know that was a paid product placement, and a few other examples of that during the Seinfeld, and you can see that on reruns today. My question has always been with regard to product placement in 2003. Has the consumer become a little jaded, and do they now, you know, understand the process and therefore the alignment with a celebrity or a person within a entertainment environment does not have the value that it once did?
Well, I think, you know, because there's more of it, they certainly will become, you know, even if they're not aware of it, I think they just naturally become more desensitized to it. And but I think there's a real opportunity, if you do it contextually, that it can work in your favor. Because, I mean, let's face it, I mean, when you're doing a sitcom or a drama, you're really trying to emulate life and, you know, in the spirit of recreating reality, you know, in a fictionalized form, why not actually use real brands?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we all know people drink Coke or Pepsi, so why not use Coke or Pepsi as opposed to some generic cola? I just think it gives, it just lends, you know, more of an air of authenticity if you do it. But again, you have to do it within the dramatic construct of the particular show. It can't be obtrusive. It can't be stagey, you know. And if you do it that way, then obviously you're failing.
You know, I think my wife and I saw The Italian Job on pay-per-view a week or two ago, and I thought it's a great example of what you're talking about, integrating the product into the fabric of the storyline. Yeah, Minnie Cooper was integrated into The Italian Job, and I thought they did a great job. And it also reminded me back years ago when the BMW Z3 launched, and it was one of the first automobiles to be successful in the 007, whatever.
I was going to say, James Bond. Probably,
yeah, whatever one that was. I've forgotten the title. But a lot of followed in behind BMW with the success of the Z3 launch back in whatever it was, 98 or 96. Do you think it can come to a point, Hank, where, for example, automobiles seem to really have jumped on the bandwagon and trying to get their product into movies, and I guess some just, you know, do a better job of it than others?
Yeah, well, car companies, I think, have a natural advantage insofar as their product is, it's a staple of modern life, and so, you know, regardless of what the entertainment property is, chances are a car is going to be, you know, part of the proceedings, part of the scenery. And so there's obviously a lot of opportunity to integrate cars. And BMW obviously raised it to an exalted form in terms of their BMW film series on the internet, and where they actually took the car and made it the central character. And I think most people will agree that those films really were, for the most part, you know, entertaining. That the car, while it was the star of the vehicle, I mean, it really was not contrived. I
right.
mean,
it was germane
made
to
sense.
The, yeah.
And it's because of the nature of the product.
Right.
It's a lot harder for Procter & Gamble to do a Swiffer series.
Right. Yeah. You know? Yes. And, you know, it's funny because as you're describing that, I was remembering that not so long ago, you can see movies and other television programs where a car pulls in and they've gone the other way back before the product placement of automobiles was so popular. And they've actually pulled chrome and names off of it, so you can't figure out what the hell the product is.
Well, look, the Cleavers drove Chryslers. Andy Griffith drove a Ford.
But you didn't know it was, or did you know that it was a Ford?
You knew it was a Ford, yeah.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you. I asked you earlier, we just have about a minute and a half left here, Hank. I asked you before about the craziest idea for a product placement. Let me go the other direction with you. What do you consider one of the all-time best product placements? Would it be E.T. with Reese's Pieces or something more recent, or what do you think?
In less than 60 seconds.
Yeah.
I think Reese's Pieces, I think you can't go wrong with that one.
It really revitalized the category, didn't it?
Yeah, yeah, it did. And then more recently, I think, again, you know, I don't mean to continue to harp on the BMW bandwagon, but, I mean, that really was, a supreme effort, I thought.
Yeah, well, apparently, I think Hank's hoping for a BMW in his driveway here soon, the way he keeps mentioning
that. It might show
that.
Up. Hey, go to adage.com/MadisonAndVine, Madison A-N-D Vine, and find out more. Hank, thanks for being on the show today here on The Advertising Show, and thanks for taking time out of your weekend. Appreciate it.
Anytime, fellas.
And you had a great time, right?
I sure did.
All right. We'll be back in just a minute.
Make informed decisions about your company's advertising strategy. This is The Advertising Show.
I'd like to buy the world a home and furnish it with love. Grow apple trees and honeybees and snow white turtle doves. I'd like to teach the world to sing.
This is The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth. That is the Hillside? No, Hilltop Singers, I think.
Hilltop, I think
Hilltop,
you're right.
Yeah. They had a thing on PBS this past week about with all
around?
Of the yes they are.
Really?
How about that? And they had these guys on singing the song the original way, of course, not the Coke endorsement, and it was kind of cool to see. Matter of fact,
they still sound the same.
For the most part, they do. Absolutely. Yeah. Good talking to Hank. And again, if you didn't catch the web address, it's adage.com/Madison and Vine. So go check it out. And Hank's a great interview.
He really is. He's very knowledgeable, and he's not one to mince words, and he's got some good stuff to talk about.
Absolutely. We've got Andy Borowitz coming up here momentarily. You want to say something real quick?
Well, I was just looking at through a Madison and Vine Advertising Age Madison and Vine newsletter. It's talking about New Line Cinema, the producer of the Will Ferrell picture Elf. Maybe you've seen some spots on that.
Yeah, that was very successful too.
Well, it mentions in this current newsletter that they have that Elf and New Line Cinema, rather, has secured a deal with Ohio Art Company, which happens to be the producers of Etch-A-Sketch.
Oh, yeah, right.
You know, the product will be integrated into the movie, and the two partners will distribute Elf-themed study guides to a million grade school students around the country this month, and hundreds of thousands of Etch-A-Sketches will be adorned with Elf stickers. So apparently, if you haven't seen that movie, they have an Etch-A-Sketch in there, and they've tied that in with the distribution of the product through various schools.
Cool. There's also some other stuff coming back as far as toys go, too. Thing about Toys R Us, bringing back the Care Bears, My Little Pony, because what's happened is the baby boomers, grown up, now having babies of their own.
Right.
And they're looking for retro-type toys. So it's that's a big thing this holiday. So let's take a break out for Andy. We'll come back and talk more.
Okay. Hi, this is Andy Borowitz for The Advertising Show. And now here's this week's feature from The Borowitz Report.
Delighted by the success of his super-secret visit to Baghdad over the Thanksgiving holiday, President George W. Bush this week has decided to do everything in secret from now on, sources acknowledged. White House Press Secretary Scott McClellan refused to comment or deny the president's decision to enshroud the executive branch in mystery, saying only that it was a secret. But Mr. McClellan did say that from now on, all information relating to foreign policy, judicial appointments, and especially the president's schedule would be divulged on a need-to-know basis only. Well, the secret Baghdad trip may have served as an inspiration for Mr. Bush's new policy. The president has long coveted the air of secrecy surrounding Vice President Dick Cheney, who Mr. Bush has seen above ground only twice in the past 18 months. Reportedly, Mr. Bush believes that his decision to evade detection will not prevent him from getting his message out to the American people, although he intends to deliver that message from now on in a top-secret code known only to him. In a sign that the president's new policy has already taken effect, Mr. Bush held an unannounced press conference on a remote Air Force base in Guam, attended by no one. To avoid being spotted, the president did not take Air Force One, instead flying in an unmarked plane operated by Hooters Air. Mr. Bush opened his press conference by saying, "Mixty, Levco, Tristic, Flexty," before dashing back onto the plane and jetting home to Crawford, Texas, where aides said he planned to do something.
This is Andy Borowitz, and this has been a special edition of The Borowitz Report from The Advertising Show. To read more reports or to receive daily email alerts, log on to BorowitzReport.com. This is Andy Borowitz saying, keep it fake, baby.
Well, that's what we do here, okay?
True.
Yeah, except for the stuff with Hank. That's real.
You know, earlier in the week, I heard Leno do a part of his monologue, and it was, I don't know about you, but comedy has to have a truthful setup before they deliver the punchline. And
right.
It was a miscue that he did, and I thought it was, I'm going to try to remember this. It's something like, I heard about Bush going over Thanksgiving to Iraq and visiting the troops. It was a wonderful thing. He said that he consulted with former President Clinton on how to sneak out of the White House without your wife knowing about it in order to do that. But the truth is, he was in Crawford, Texas. He wasn't in the White House when he did that.
Okay.
I think.
Yeah, you're probably right.
He was in Crawford.
Right.
So I was sitting there, I got the joke, but I was thinking, hey, his writers don't realize that I think he was in Crawford.
The only thing he does in Crawford, Texas is screw up the air traffic over his ranch.
Well, that's true. And according to the article, the bit that you just did from the Andy Borowitz piece, apparently there was a smell of chicken wings on board at Hooters Airlines. I wonder if that airline's how it's doing. I know we reported on that being something that was coming out a year and a half half, 2 years ago, and I've never heard
it
since.
Is it still flying? I don't hear that much about it.
You know, every time I'm in an airport and I smell wings, I look around for the Hooter girls, and I don't see them.
So anyway, we've got Tom Hill coming up next next week. Tom Hill is author of TV Land to Go. He's also, a creative director at Nick at Night and TV Land. That'll be great.
If you know TV Land and you've seen it on television, this guy's the mind and the creative talent behind that.
It's a really cool, really, really, really cool network.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool.
I agree.
So we'll have Tom on next week. Thanks again to Hank Kim, editor of Advertising Age's Madison and Vine, and we'll be talking to you as well next week and probably still have some leftover turkey.
So where did the time go today?
I don't know. Let me go see if I can find some more. Nope, I can't.
I'll be back in 6 days and 23 hours.
Okay, sounds good to me, too. Advertising Show is being brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. We encourage you to visit Advertising Age Magazine online at adage.com. Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth, and this is a Big Radio Midgets production.